From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Hello and welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis, and joining me on the panel this week are VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell and Marketplace correspondent Nancy Marshall Genzer. Welcome, Anita and Nancy. Well, here are the issues. Former President Donald Trump pleaded not guilty to charges on 37 counts following a Department of Justice indictment, alleging he violated both the Espionage Act and obstructed justice in taking classified records from his presidency and refusing to return them. Trump's plea sets up a legal battle that could play out for months while he seeks to win back the U.S. presidency. Moderate House Republicans lashed out against the conservative lawmakers who shut down the chamber floor last week using a closed-door GOP meeting to accuse them in apparently profane terms of undermining the party's agenda. U.S. President Joe Biden met with NATO's chief ahead of a high-pressure July summit where allies are likely to face a number of Ukraine-related challenges, this amid intensifying speculation over who will head the 31-member alliance after the current leader, Jens Stoltenberg, steps down as planned later this year. The Federal Reserve leaves interest rates unchanged for the first time since it kicked off a round of monetary policy tightening in 2022. Policymakers signal more rate increases are still to come once they assess how the economy is evolving. UN nuclear chief Rafael Grossi said that he was very concerned that the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant could be caught in Ukraine's counteroffensive to retake Russian-occupied territory. Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko said his country has started taking delivery of Russian tactical nuclear weapons, some of which he said were three times more powerful than the atomic bombs that the U.S. dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Well, those are the issues, and let's get started. Many observers of this case against former President Donald Trump are asking why he was indicted when others, such as President Biden, when he was a senator, and former Vice President Mike Pence, and also former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, also are said to have mishandled classified documents. Why is this case different?
What we've seen with these document dust-ups with the three figures you mentioned and now former President Donald Trump is a difference in reaction. Once the other figures realized that they had documents that they weren't supposed to have, this is unambiguous. You're not supposed to have this stuff in your house, not least in your bathroom, behind the shower curtain. They immediately returned them, apologized, and braced themselves for consequences. What we're learning here is that the American justice system actually does take a somewhat forgiving view of how you react when you make a mistake. Because let's be honest, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody in the world makes mistakes. Presidents, heads of state are no different. The difference is when Biden discovered these documents, he immediately informed the relevant authorities. Donald Trump is doing the exact opposite and in a defiant, extremely outward facing, help me out here, Nancy. I mean, he's throwing everything.
He's embracing it. In fact, he's actually raising money from all of this. The campaign has said it raised more than $6 million in a few days after this second indictment of the former president. Now, we can't confirm that until the campaign officially files its fundraising report with the Federal Election Commission for the second quarter of this year. But that's what they're saying. They raised more than $6 million. And that includes $2 million that the former president raised at a fundraiser at his golf club in Bedminster, New Jersey, the evening after he was indicted. So he is embracing this and he is fundraising off of it.
And also, the historic indictment has Senate Republicans worried his legal troubles will create a major headwind for GOP candidates who want to be president. What impact will this have on them, considering that Trump still is the front runner?
I find it very interesting that the major candidates on the Republican side are almost all kind of defending Trump and citing this indictment as a weaponization of the justice system, with the notable exception, I think, of Chris Christie. His campaign seems intent on basically just dragging Donald Trump whenever he can. I'm not even sure what else there is to Chris Christie's campaign other than just dragging Donald Trump at every opportunity. But everybody else has said, oh, well, this is a weaponization of the justice system. We heard Nikki Haley say she might be inclined to pardon him. We heard Vivek Ramaswamy say he absolutely will pardon Trump if he's elected. So it's being interpreted in a really interesting way by the Republican Party, I think. And I suspect that is going to shift because politicians do shift when it's advantageous to them. But right now, it's very interesting to see that the Republican field is standing behind their man.
And this could drag out for quite a while because President Trump is known for dragging out trials, and especially if he thinks it could be to his advantage. His lawyers could file some motions that would really slow things down. They could challenge the federal government's override of the attorney-client privilege. The Justice Department overrode that privilege using a crime fraud exception, and they were able to use lawyers' notes against the former president. Also, Trump could allege selective prosecution, that he was singled out for prosecution because he's a former president. So this could go right through the 2024 presidential campaign.
What is interesting, though, is that Trump, who's been sued countless times, has only really ever faced suits in civil court. This is a criminal case, and the contours of this are quite different in that way. You know, you can't really run down the clock on a criminal case in the same way that you can on a civil case and hope that you reach a settlement, which is what he's historically done. So I think that this tactic that he's using, which he's pulled from his own playbook, might not work the same way in this context.
And of course, the Justice Department is also looking into former President Trump, any role he might have had in the attack on the Capitol on January 6th. And then, of course, there's the Georgia investigation into the former president's efforts to get election officials there to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. And then the former president faces state charges in New York from the Manhattan District Attorney, accused of contributing hush money to Stormy Daniels to cover up his alleged affair with her. So he does face fire on a lot of fronts.
You even left one out, Nancy. You left.
Oh, did I?
Jean Carroll sexual assault and defamation case.
Oh, goodness.
And there are some Republicans who are concerned. For instance, Senator Mike Rounds of South Dakota, he's endorsing Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina for president. And he told reporters that there's no question the serious allegations against Trump will hurt the GOP if he is the nominee. So there is some concern there. And looking at the Democrats, what are they saying about this?
Well, President Biden has been very, very quiet about this. He doesn't want to be accused of prosecuting the former president for his own political gain, because at this point, it looks like Trump is the person that Biden would face in the 2024 election. So we're really not hearing much out of the White House.
And what we've also heard, is whispered in the hallways of the West Wing, is that Biden has directed the DNC and also his reelection campaign to not make this a campaign issue, which they very easily could, but it would look, as Nancy said, as if he's prosecuting his political enemies. So this seems to be what the Democrats are doing right now.
So we will just have to see how this is all going to develop in the months ahead. Well, moderate House Republicans lashed out against the conservative lawmakers who shut down the chamber floor last week using a closed-door GOP meeting to accuse them in apparently profane terms of undermining the party's agenda. So what is happening within the U.S. House of Representatives?
Yeah, I heard that one representative even dropped an F-bomb, which I guess in moderate Republican language is flibbity-gibbet. Or something like that.
I don't
know what an F-bomb is if you're an upstanding moderate Republican. But what this is the long-awaited reckoning within the Republican Party between the extreme right Freedom Caucus contingent, which President Biden has called the MAGA wing, and the moderate Republicans who want to say, wait a minute, we're the party of fiscal responsibility, conservative social values, but we're not that far out there. We have seen that the Freedom Caucus has thrown a wrench in the works of these budget negotiations and these debt ceiling negotiations, and it's making the entire party look like they're stalling progress on important things. And so this was an extension of that frustration. Flibbity gibbet.
I like that a lot. I'm going to start using that.
Me too.
For my kids. Yeah. And if you think about it, there are just 11 members of the House Republican caucus who were able to hold everything up. And House Speaker McCarthy made a deal with them. They voted to reverse this gun restriction from the Biden administration on braces for guns that make them a lot more lethal. And the administration wasn't going to take that away. It's just that if you had a brace like this, you would have to register with the government and pay a fee. But the House struck that down. President Biden will definitely veto that. So that's not going to go anywhere. But what this group of 11 House Republicans wants could really end up putting a monkey wrench into the negotiations over the budget. And the government's fiscal year ends September 30th. They're supposed to have a budget in place October 1st. They usually put in a placeholder. They vote for a continuing resolution to just keep spending at the prior year's level. So they'll probably do that again. But there are already some people raising the specter of a government shutdown over all this.
Yes. And House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and other GOP leaders, they have downplayed the severity of these internal tensions, characterizing the disagreements as an inevitable function of governing with a tiny House majority. I guess we will have to see how this is going to play out, and hopefully no government shutdown. Well, Anita, President Biden met with NATO Chief Jens Stoltenberg in Washington as the search for a successor to Stoltenberg, since he will be leaving the position in September. This is really heating up now. So what was the outcome of this meeting?
There are a few outcomes that I just want to highlight. One is that it appears that the main push at the summit in Vilnius next month is going to be for all NATO members to contribute at least 2%, or to rather spend at least 2% of their GDP on defense. This is a push that NATO has been banging on about since at least 2006, but very few countries actually make that threshold. The United States is a shining example of far exceeding the threshold, but that's because the United States spends more on defense than the next 10 countries combined. We spend about 3.5% of our GDP on defense in this country. But that's a big thing that I expect Biden and Stoltenberg, who will still be Secretary General, will be banging on about at this summit. And this is, of course, money that needs to go towards fortifying NATO against Russian aggression in Ukraine. That's another aspect, and that's going to continue. I think we are seeing some fatigue, definitely public fatigue, with the conflict in Ukraine, and these leaders are going to be under pressure to come up with more than just saying, again, we're going to support Ukraine as long as it takes. They're going to need to have something to show for it 2 years in. Then the other thing you mentioned is the succession issue, which is just some high-stakes drama here. I just can't read the tea leaves on how this is going to play out, because Stoltenberg isn't talking, and neither is the other candidate we know about, which is Denmark's Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen. She was in the White House last week. She was asked about her candidacy for that job, and she was very coy about it. The other leading candidate we know about is the UK's Ben Wallace. The objection to him from NATO members is that the UK is not in the EU, and they'd like to see somebody from the EU. So we don't seem to have consensus about this. Is it possible that Stoltenberg could stay on a fourth time, because he's already extended his term three times? That's another possibility, I suppose, and we'll just have to wait and see.
And President Biden is stressing his commitment to NATO. The White House released a statement saying he and Stoltenberg discussed the implications of Russia's war in Ukraine and the importance of continuing to strengthen NATO, and also their shared desire to welcome Sweden into NATO as soon as possible. The U.S. is also sending more equipment to Ukraine. Secretary of State Antony Blinken issued a statement saying that now he's authorizing the 40th drawdown for Ukraine, $325 million worth of U.S. arms and equipment, and that includes munitions for the high-mobility artillery rocket systems and anti-tank weapons, armored vehicles. So the U.S. is trying to send a message that it is not giving up on Ukraine and it is very much committed to NATO.
Yes, very interesting. And as you all also brought out, the NATO summit is coming up in July and members will be meeting in Lithuania's capital. So we will see what comes out of that summit. Well, it's time now for a quick break. And when we return, is America's economy on the rebound? Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/issues. Check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell and Marketplace correspondent Nancy Marshall Genzer. Well, Nancy, the U.S. Federal Reserve is holding off on raising interest rates. However, grocery prices are rising again, according to new data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Price Index. That is a key measure of inflation. Looking at the grocery prices and other things that are still high and going higher, where is the U.S. economy headed?
Yeah, we are still battling inflation. It is still more than double the Federal Reserve's target of 2% inflation. And that's why the Fed chair, Jerome Powell, at the Fed's most recent meeting, even though the Fed left interest rates unchanged, it did not increase interest rates. They left the door open to do that in July. And in fact, the Fed issues economic projections every 3 months. And the latest projection they're showing, they expect interest rates to hit 5.6% in the U.S. by the end of this year. And that implies two more interest rate increases this year. So the inflation fight is far from over.
But with everything being higher, people are feeling inflation on a daily basis. So what can Americans do?
Well, they did get a lot of relief at the pump. You know, in this last inflation report, the CPI, which is the broadest measure of inflation, gas prices plummeted. They're much lower this year than they were last summer. So they're getting a little bit of relief there. Egg prices are way down because we don't have as many cases of avian flu. So egg prices are back to about $2 a carton, depending where you are. But people are still feeling it. It's a little bit better, but they are still feeling higher prices and their paychecks aren't necessarily keeping up with inflation.
And I'd just like to highlight the seasonal trends at work here. People are going to probably feel more aggrieved about these higher prices, whether they're, as Nancy mentions, they're going down. But we're hitting high summer season, which is peak travel time by road for a lot of Americans. Many Americans are taking the road to either go on holiday or visit relatives. And number two, the kids are out of school. And whether they're in or out of school, they've got to eat annoyingly regularly, as I'm finding. So people are going to find themselves shelling out more on these things, and they're going to notice it more. And so I think that could lead to some dissatisfaction.
And will inflation be a hot topic for the upcoming 2024 presidential election?
Yeah, although it could improve. I mean, the Fed is projecting inflation to come down, and it's actually projecting that it will cut interest rates next year. So I think 2024 is going to be a pivotal year. That could be the year we see the Fed get inflation under control. If it does, of course, that would be very good news for Biden.
One interesting thing that a colleague brought up at the White House the other day was that rent inflation has not subsided. So for a lot of Americans who are renting, they're not seeing any reduction in their costs. I think this is going to be a continuing issue for almost every sector of American society.
And looking at it on a global level, how does the U.S. inflation compare to other wealthy nations such as Great Britain?
Well, we shouldn't really complain too much because I believe their inflation is about double ours. And central banks around the world have also been raising interest rates, even as the U.S. did not change rates this month. So, yeah, prices in Europe are in some cases a lot worse than here in the U.S., partly because of the war in Ukraine that really pushed up energy and food prices.
So let's move on now to get our last topic in. UN nuclear chief Rafael Grossi said that he was very concerned that the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant could be caught in Ukraine's counteroffensive to retake Russian-occupied territory. So now the concerns over the nuclear power plant overheating are coming to light. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, let's just reflect on what happened in 1986 when I believe it was reactor 4 at Chernobyl melted down, and it affected populations across Europe. Grossi's highlighting this because if something were bad to happen at Zaporizhia, then it would affect not just Ukrainians, not just people in that part of Ukraine, but people all across Europe. The fallout could extend quite far across Europe. So this would really be bringing the war home to a lot of people across that continent.
Although from what I've seen, if there were a meltdown at Zaporizhia, it would not be as severe as Chernobyl in 1986. I mean, yes, if the reactors ran out of water, it would be terrible. The spent fuel rods would start to melt down and there would be radioactive releases. But Zaporizhia has been shut down for a long time, so it doesn't require as much coolant. And apparently the release of radioactivity wouldn't be as bad as Chernobyl, but any release of radioactivity is surely not a good thing. Apparently, though, there is enough water on hand to keep the plant cool for the next few months, and they are looking at other alternatives, piping in water from other places to keep the plant cool. Hopefully they'll succeed.
Yes, another aspect of this, Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko said his country has started taking delivery of Russian tactical nuclear weapons. And in a statement, he said, "God forbid I have to make a decision to use those weapons today, but there would be no hesitation if we face an aggression." And that was a statement that he put out. So how has the U.S. or NATO commented on this?
The U.N. and also global powers have noted that they see this as a violation of several non-proliferation treaties that Russia and, importantly, Belarus have signed. And I think it's interesting how Russia and Belarus are kind of threading the needle on this argument, saying these are not Belarusian nukes. These are Russian nukes. We borrowed them from a friend. We're just holding them for them, which sounds, I think, what a lot of teenagers say when parents find things that they're not supposed to find. This is mine. This is my friend's. It's interesting that that argument is being deployed in this context. So they're saying this is a clear violation. Russia's saying, no, 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 we're just leaving these at our friend's place, which is an interesting argument. Nuclear weapons are such a sensitive issue, and we've seen that Putin and now Lukashenko are not hesitating to threaten nuclear consequences. So I think the world is treading a little bit lightly in public and probably behind closed doors, being a little bit pushier about it.
There is, I think, one important detail here. Lukashenko, of course, yes, he said that these weapons are three times more powerful than the atomic bombs the U.S. dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki during World War II. But these are tactical warheads, so they are less powerful. They have a shorter range than those nuclear weapons that the U.S. used in Japan. So that is one bright spot, maybe, that these are not as powerful as Lukashenko says.
Yes, well, let's hope not. Well, it's time now to find out what is weighing on the minds of our panelists this week. So, Anita, what is weighing on your mind this week?
What is weighing on my mind this week is that we're midway through Pride Month, which is the annual month-long celebration of sexual minorities. This is celebrated not just in the U.S., but around the world, and the White House recently had a celebration. What is weighing on my mind is the heightened levels of pushback against members of this community and the concerns that I'm hearing from members of different sexual minorities who are saying that this presents a risk to their safety and their well-being. You know, it's just sad because this hasn't been the case in the United States. It does feel a little bit like we're taking a bit of a step back in our acceptance of all Americans, because the federal government has an obligation to protect the well-being
of all Americans. There's no fine print in there that says you only get to protect Americans whose ideas and whose lifestyles you agree with. It's all Americans. And so it is a bit concerning that we're seeing that in the United States, not to mention around the world.
Thank you. And Nancy?
Well, not surprisingly, since I'm a business reporter, I am obsessed with inflation. And on a personal level, I went shopping the other day for groceries and I spent $80 for two bags of groceries. And I just thought, how is that possible? I didn't buy steak. No, I did not splurge, but I spent $40 on each bag of groceries that I bought. And we've also noticed it going out to eat. We don't go out to eat nearly as much as we did. But our favorite restaurant just down the street charges $27 for a bowl of pasta. I am living the inflation that I am reporting about. And I really hope the Fed is right, that it's going to get things under control as early as next year.
Thank you. And thank you both for your thoughts. And we will end the show on those notes. My thanks go to our panelists, VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell and Marketplace correspondent Nancy Marshall Genzer. I'm Kim Lewis, and be sure to join us next weekend for more Issues in the News.